Chapter 69. Claire, though she might as well rest here till it should get a little lighter, and he flung his overcoat upon her, and sat down by her side. Angel, if anything happens to me, will you watch over Liza Lou for my sake? She asked, when they had listened a long time to the wind among the pillars. I will. She is so good and simple and pure. Oh, Angel, I wish you would marry her, if you lose me, as you will do shortly. Oh, if you would. If I lose you, I lose all. And she is my sister-in-law. That's nothing, dearest. People marry sister-laws continually about Marlott, and Liza Lou is so gentle and sweet, and she is growing so beautiful. Oh, I could share you with her willingly when we are spirits. If you would train her and teach her, Angel, and bring her up for your own self. As he had all the best of me without the bad of me, and if she were to become yours it would almost seem as if death had not divided us. Well, I have said it. I won't mention it again. She ceased, and he fell into thought. In the far northeast sky he could see between the pillars a level streak of light. The uniform concavity of black cloud was lifting bodily like the lid of a pot, letting in at the earth's edge the coming day, against which the towering monoliths and trilithons began to be blackly defined. Did they sacrifice to God here? Asked she. No, said he. Who to? I believe to the sun. That lofty stone set away by itself is in the direction of the sun, which will presently rise behind it. This reminds me, dear, she said. You remember you never would interfere with any belief of mine, before we were married? But I knew your mind all the same, and I thought as you thought, not from any reasons of my own, but because you thought so. Tell me now, Angel, do you think we shall meet again, after we are dead? I want to know. He kissed her to avoid a reply at such a time. Oh, Angel, I fear that means no, said she, with a suppressed sob. Andy, I wanted so, to see you again so much, so much. What not even you and I, Angel, who love each other so well. Like a greater than himself, to the critical question at the critical time he did not answer, and they were again silent. In a minute or two her breathing became more regular, her clasp of his hand relaxed, and she fell asleep. The band of silver paleness along the east horizon made even the distant parts of the great plain appear dark and near, and the whole enormous landscape bore that impressive reserve, taciturnity, and hesitation which is usual just before day. The eastward pillars and their architraves stood up blackly against the light, and the great flame-shaped sunstone beyond them, and the stone of sacrifice midway. Presently the night wind died out, and the quivering little pools in the cup-like hollows of the stones lay still. At the same time something seemed to move on the verge of the dip eastward a mere dot. It was the head of a man approaching them from the hollow beyond the sunstone. Claire wished they had gone onward, but in the circumstances decided to remain quiet. The figure came straight towards the circle of pillars in which they were. He heard something behind him, the brush of feet. Turning, he saw over the prostrate columns another figure. Then before he was aware, another was at hand on the right, under a trilithon, and another on the left. The dawn shone full on the front of the man westward, and Claire could discern from this that he was tall, and walked as if trained. They all closed in with evident purpose. Her story then was true. Springing to his feet, he looked around for a weapon, loose stone, means of escape, anything. By this time the nearest man was upon him. It is no use, sir, he said. Here are 16 of us on the plain, and the whole country is reared. Let her finish her sleep, he implored in a whisper of the men as they gathered round. When they saw where she lay, which they had not done till then, they showed no objection, and stood watching her, as still as the pillars around. He went to the stone and bent over her, holding one poor little hand. Her breathing now was quick and small, like that of a lesser creature than a woman. All waited in the growing light, their faces and hands, as if they were silvered, the remainder of their figures dark, the stones glistening green-gray, the plain still a mass of shade. Soon the light was strong, and a ray shone upon her unconscious form, peering under her eyelids and waking her. "What is it, angel?" she said, starting up. "Have they come for me?" "Yes, dearest," he said. "They have come." "It is as it should be," she murmured. "Jell, I am almost glad, yes, glad. This happiness could not have lasted. It was too much. I have had enough, and now I shall not live for you to despise me." She stood up, shook herself, and went forward, neither of the men having moved. "I am ready," she said quietly. Lix, the city of Wintoncester, that fine old city, aforetime capital of Wessex, lay amidst its convex and concave townlands in all the brightness and warmth of a July morning. The gabled brick, tile, and freestone houses had almost dried off for the season their integument of lichen, the streams in the meadows were low, and in the sloping high street, from the west gateway to the medieval cross, and from the medieval cross to the bridge, that leisurely dusting and sweeping was in progress which usually ushers in an old-fashioned market day. From the western gate aforesaid the highway, as every Wintoncestrian knows, ascends a long and regular incline of the exact length of a measured mile, leaving the houses gradually behind. Up this road from the precincts of the city two persons were walking rapidly, as if unconscious of the trying ascent, unconscious through preoccupation, and not through buoyancy. They had emerged upon this road through a narrow barred wicket in a high wall a little lower down. They seemed anxious to get out of the sight of the houses, and of their kind, and this road appeared to offer the quickest means of doing so. Though they were young, they walked with bowed heads, which gate of grief the sun's rays smiled on pitilessly. One of the pair was Angel Clare, the other a tall budding creature, half girl, half woman, a spiritualized image of Tess, slighter than she, but with the same beautiful eyes Clare's sister-in-law, Liza Lou. Their pale faces seemed to have shrunk to half their natural size. They moved on hand in hand, and never spoke a word, the drooping of their heads being that of Giotto's woe apostles. When they had nearly reached the top of the great west hill, the clocks in the town struck eight. Each gave a start at the notes, and, walking onward yet a few steps, they reached the first milestone, standing whitely on the green margin of the grass, and backed by the down, which here was open to the road. They entered upon the turf, and, impelled by a force that seemed to overrule their will, suddenly stood still, turned, and waited in paralyzed suspense beside the stone. The prospect from this summit was almost unlimited. In the valley beneath lay the city they had just left, its more prominent buildings showing as in an isometric drawing, among them the broad cathedral tower, with its Norman windows and immense length of aisle and nave, the spires of St. Thomas's, the pinnacled tower of the college, and, more to the right, the tower and gables of the ancient hospice, where to this day the pilgrim may receive his dole of bread and ale. Behind the city, swept the rotund upland of St. Catherine's Hill, further off, landscape beyond landscape, till the horizon was lost in the radiance of the sun hanging above it. Against these far stretches of country rose, in front of the other city edifices, a large red brick building, with level gray roofs, and rows of short barred windows bespeaking captivity, the whole contrasting greatly by its formalism with the quaint irregularities of the Gothic erections. It was somewhat disguised from the road in passing it by yews and evergreen oaks, but it was visible enough up here. The wicket from which the pair had lately emerged was in the wall of this structure. From the middle of the building an ugly flat-topped octagonal tower ascended against the east horizon, and viewed from this spot, on its shady side, and against the light, it seemed the one blot on the city's beauty. Yet it was with this blot, and not with the beauty, that the two gazers were concerned. Upon the cornice of the tower a tall staff was fixed. Their eyes were riveted on it. A few minutes after the hour had struck, something moved slowly up the staff, and extended itself upon the breeze. It was a black flag. Justice was done, and the President of the Immortals, an echelon phrase, had ended his sport with Tess. and the d'Urberville knights and dames slept on in their tombs unknowing. The two speechless gazers bent themselves down to the earth, as if in prayer, and remained thus a long time, absolutely motionless. The flag continued to wave silently. As soon as they had strength they arose, joined hands again, and went on. End of the Project Gutenberg edition of Tess of the D'Urbervilles. TESS 1 by Gutenberg edition.